This is the Retina Independent Medical Education Podcast with kind support from Roche and Zeiss. In this podcast, we will hear a discussion between Professor Anat Lowenstein of Israel and Dr. Carl O from the USA as they discuss AMD and DME patient demographics and the anti-VEGF treatment burden.
Welcome to the 2021 Uretina video interviews on AMD and DME innovations. I'm Dr. Anat Lowenstein, and today I'm joined by Dr. Carl O. Hello, Carl.
Hi, Anat.
Dr. O and I will discuss innovations in AMD and DME treatment, including artificial intelligence diagnostics and home monitoring, as well as extended duration anti-VEGF therapies. Let's start with patient demographics and anti-VEGF therapy burden. And I would like to address you, Carl, and ask you, what are the fundamental differences between AMD and DME patient groups, and why does it matter for developing a treatment approach, especially nowadays during and post the COVID pandemic?
Yeah, I think there are way more similarities than there are differences. Both are patients who need pretty, regular anti-VEGF suppression. They both are at risk of severe vision loss without that treatment. Obviously, there's a big difference in the typical age. The AMD patient is older, often depending on lots more people
caregivers
to get them to the office. But the patient with diabetes is younger, often working, having to miss work to come to the appointments.
And having many other doctor's appointments many times,
exactly.
Which is also an issue.
Yeah,
and during the pandemic, did you have any difference in the way you treated the patients, having the patients with AMD come more regularly? Because it's also relevant now. We are still trying to decrease the patient load in our clinics for safety, right?
Well, I would have to say not so much now. Early, when we really didn't know how to keep patients safe, we purposely delayed a lot of treatments. We thought we absolutely was necessary, but we were really worried that we were risking people's lives to bring them to the office.
Yeah.
Now I think we understand how to have a safe office with masking and appropriate protocols. I feel that it's very safe to bring the patients to the office.
Yeah, and I think on the contrary, now we have sometimes to remind the patients that they need to come back because maybe they miss their annual check or their semi-annual follow-up or the every 4 months already or things like that. And we need to remind them that they need to come back now. This is crucial, I think, because we know the patients do need many injections. So let's switch gears a little bit from the burden and on average, what is the number of injections on an annual basis that are necessary to control the intraretinal and subretinal fluid levels with the treatments that we have nowadays at our armamentarium for both diseases? Is there a difference between AMD and DME? Are they very similar in the number of injections?
I think for optimal treatment, it's pretty similar. But to really answer your question, what is the number we need? The number is more than we give.
Absolutely.
So like every study that has been done of what we call real world treatment shows that we don't give sufficient injections to achieve the sort of vision outcomes we did in the pivotal trials.
So, and it almost depended on the number of injections. That are studies that show that in countries where the number, like the Aura and Luminous, where the number of injections, in countries when the number of injections is high, such as the UK, for example, the visual acuity actually follows a much better path than in countries like Italy that at that time had a smaller number of injections. Is that your experience as well?
Definitely. And what's so interesting though is we all know that, and despite the fact we all know that, everyone tends on average to undertreat because it's
Absolutely.
Very difficult in the real world to get patients to come back for the frequency of treatment that's necessary.
Yeah, probably it's an issue of the burden to the patient, to ourselves, and to the system that sometimes cannot accommodate this large number of patients. And so you're saying that it's pretty similar between AMD and DME. I feel that for AMD, it's more injections on a longer term. In the first year, it's practically the same, but many times in DME, you need somewhat less injections. But I do agree that it's pretty similar, at least in the first year. And you talked about patients not coming. Do you know if there were factors identified for patients not coming, for their missing their visits? Are there any I don't know if to call it biomarkers, markers that will tell you which patient is going to be non-compliant?
Oh, that's interesting. I know that many surveys have been done that show that various reasons for treatment burden, you know, a lot have to do with just availability for transportation.
Right. Yeah, the distance from the clinic.
The
you wouldn't think that it's so
clinic,
important.
Right. The time away from work. But I don't know of a way to really look at a patient and know for sure, oh, she's the one who's going to be compliant. I'm often very fooled by who I think will be compliant and who ends up being compliant.
Yeah, I think we did a study that actually looked at it in many other trials, and it was published not long ago in JAMA Ophthalmology, and we identified that patients that are not well controlled for their diabetes, patients who are a kind of, you know, I don't know, neglected in some way, they are also the ones that are likely to miss their visits. The patient who has a very high hemoglobin A1C, he need to be monitored more closely because he may also tend to be less compliant with our management. And I think it makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you think in that study there were modifiable factors, or are they simply, it's the way it is?
I think maybe it is modifiable, but I think it needs a lot of effort on our part and on the system part and on patients' advocacy groups and things like that. That is not easy to obtain, so it's really not so simple. So altogether, if a patient misses an injection, are you worried the same if he's an AMD patient or a DME patient?
I worry a little differently. It's interesting. I think. For short term, I worry a little bit more about AMD. DME patients or diabetic retinopathy patients can recover a bit more.
Right.
AMD patients may have something happen that's not recoverable. On the other hand, for the really long time away, the long delay, diabetic patients are at a risk of some, you know, neovascular glaucoma,
exactly.
A horrific outcome
exactly.
That really makes them lose all their vision. So they have a different kind of risk when they are gone for months and months, which
exactly.
will happen. But AMD are the ones that have that more, they're a week or two late, and then you
and then
see
they
something
see
bad.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I think you really helped to really explain how important it is to maintain the schedule of injections, the schedule of visits, both in AMD and DME, and to bring back the patients that maybe we lost a little bit during the pandemic. So thank you very much for highlighting this. And I think we all are aware that it's very important to treat our patients in a timely manner and for a long time.
We do the best we can.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Lots of things to think about in that very interesting discussion. Thank you once again to our sponsors, Roche and Zeiss. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode from Professor Anat Lowenstein and Dr. Carl Oh. In the next podcast, the discussion will be on emergent therapeutics and sustained release devices. That's it until next time, and a reminder, there is more available on this topic at eplatform.uretina.org.